in the Ozarks, back on the farm.
Well, come on in and set a spell, friends. Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and the other in Ozark folklore and traditions, and just generally speaking, to help brighten up a hot Saturday. Good morning, Mae.
Good morning, Fred. Good morning. And thank you, Fred Lynn. And good morning, friends. And how are you this morning? Hot weather, I'll say so. And the thing of it is, Fred, I'm as hoarse as a goose from sleeping with a fan right on me all night. Honestly, though, I nearly smothered last night. But then it takes some hot weather to make a summer, doesn't it? And yet there's not a finer climate in all of America than these Ozarks, because we have such a diversity of weather. Of course, that diversity of weather sometimes is very bad for sinus trouble and things like that. But it makes it pleasant. It doesn't stay hot too long or cold too long. It's a wonderful climate. And you know, 16 million tourists a year come to the Ozarks of Missouri and Arkansas. That seems almost impossible to believe, but I read it. Very authentic place. 16 million a year, last year, to the Ozarks of Missouri and Arkansas. I don't know how many more in the rest of Missouri, up north and all, and the rest of Arkansas. And people who come here to live love it. I recall a sweet little poem sent to me way back in 1933 when I was a columnist. It was written by a woman named Rosetta E. Keener at Keener, Arkansas. We hadn't any home, Billy and I, till we came to the Ozarks to root hog or die. We now have a cabin. No more we will roam, just a little log cabin, a place we call home. There's a hearth, a rug, and a kitten playing on it, a split-bottom chair, and an old sunbonnet. A garden, an orchard, a clear-flowing spring, bright gleaming milk pans, and songbirds that sing. It isn't a castle, Mrs. McCord, it's just a log cabin close to the Lord. That's the way they used to write to me about our Ozark country. Thousands of them. So little grumbling about the depression we had then and hard times, and so much talk of the good things God had given them, and often telling me of the good things they had stored in cellar and smokehouses, and their love of the streams and the valleys and the sunsets. No Bolsheviks or anarchists and agitators and complainers, but so much of the sweet, simple life. As the poet says, the short and simple annals of the poor. Not that we're poor by any means. Don't get snooty about us, you outsiders who come in here. We're just doing fine. We have good highways, good schools, and modern farms, and educated people just as they have other places. We're right up to the cat's ankle, and don't you forget it. We can show ham and eggs with anybody. But that's not what we grow reminiscent and romantic and poetic about. It's the good old days and the things we're trying to preserve and carry into literature and the consciousness of the world outside, and to carry them along for the memory of our children. The things that are now passing, the survival of a primitive people, and the world, strange to say, is eager to hear about all those very things. You just haven't any idea. I could talk the rest of the time in my experience of how eager they are. But the days of the old Ozark mountaineer are passing. The life he carved out of these hills is being swallowed up in the maws of commercialism. His old friends are gone away. His children are driven to make for themselves a place in the new industries, and he cannot enter into the newer interests. He misses the old picnics and the old log rollings and the corn huskings and the house raisings, the old camp meetings and foot washings, and he misses the horse traders and the little corner store and the old-time hospitality, which is no more. To me, it's a tragedy beyond words. But so goes the world. I don't want to say the old-time hospitality is no more. We have lots of hospitality in the Ozarks, but just not that come-in-and-stay-all-night kind we used to have. The old Hillman doesn't take his turn of corn to the mill anymore. Instead of that, the dynamite of progress levels a path to his cabin door. And there's nothing can be done about it. Our great writer, Charles Morrow Wilson, said this one time about the Ozarks in his books. Backward America. It's a wonderful book. He said it is a land of Elizabethan ways, an America of cavaliers and curtsies, a land of mystic allegiances and enduring frontiers, where moods of yesterday touch hands with probable ways of tomorrow. And life is good thereabouts, because, as Bill Coldiron puts it, a man don't keep eternally in a sweat about things. That's it in a nutshell. A man don't keep eternally in a sweat about things. I'm so glad that we have had writers who have tried to keep the torch burning and preserve these things for future generations in black and white. The inimitable Vance Randolph, who began to preserve dialect, traditions, customs, history, and lore, as much as, and songs too, as much more than anybody else, his four volumes, the largest folk song publication in the world. And he began as much as 40 years ago, and his books are in every important library in America. I tried to borrow one from the great Central Library when I was in New York to do some reviewing about a particular item as I was going to speak to a crowd there. That huge library that is as big as Springfield downtown, their big Central Library in New York. And they told me they had 15 copies of his Ozark books, but they were continually out on loan, and I would have to wait at least a month to get one. They told me they had 250 copies of other Ozark books, and they're always out, they're always borrowed. Then Otto Rayburn, who died and left that great blank place which never can be filled by anyone, he gave his whole life to a chronicle of the Ozark country and has left a most priceless Ozark encyclopedia of several million words to the University of Arkansas, which they wouldn't take thousands of dollars for. And then the lesser writers, singing the song of this strangely fascinating and dramatic country in both prose and poetry. And I'm so glad to see many papers now keeping right at this preservation and recording. The Mountaineer, published at Branson, with several excellent Ozarkan writers on its staff, and printing each month some priceless stuff. Gerald Pipes at Reed Spring, to whom Otto Rayburn left the legacy of his magazine, gets it out yearly, and it's a most excellent and elegantly printed Ozark publication called the Ozark Guide. Many of our county papers, like my home paper, the Stone County Republican, and all the papers around, have small touches of the early history of our people. And at Galena, a new publication about the lakes and the sports and the fishing called, Outdoors. Now, I've forgotten the name now, just now. But anyway, it's a very fine paper there. And it's a sports paper entirely. And I was delighted to see an article in it recalling the old-time gigging and the jumping fish in the boat like we used to do. You know, a lot of people don't believe that, but then it's a fact. I have to tell you about it sometime. Many times have I seen a wagon load of fish brought up from the river in my little village of Galena and tied to the hitch rack and sold for 5 cents a pound, all you wanted. Beautiful fresh river bass, salmon, catfish, red horse, and even eels. All you wanted. But the writer in this paper forgot to mention another old-time way of catching fish. That was noodling. I knew the old-time noodlers, a good many of them, when I was a child, and you ought to see a noodler's hands the next morning after he'd gone down under, dived down, and fought big 30-pound catfish all night under rocks and roots. Well, he didn't stay under all night. He went back and forth under rocks and roots in deep holes. You ought to see his hands. You ought to fight with a catfish once. Later they got to making cruel-looking noodling hooks, hand-wrought. Now all that is now out of date and strictly against the law, which is right, and it should be against the law. I often think about some old things that have so completely vanished. I wonder if anyone has a mad stone for the cure of hydrophobia. Did you ever hear about a mad stone, Fred? You know, they used to have them. I wonder if they have one anymore, or if it's ever used. You know, about 25 years ago, there was one right here in Springfield, and people came to it for mad dog bite. In my columns in 1935, we discussed it, and I have some very interesting history from very reliable people. Amazing things. About 1926, I went over on Grant Street in this city to the office of a homeopathic physician and saw the Madstone in operation. I'd never seen it before, and I wanted to see it. He was treating a boy, 12 years old, who was bitten by a hydrophobia dog on Chase Street here. And they were too poor to have any other medical aid in the hospitals. It was a wonderful thing to see him treat with that Madstone. In the olden times, the most noted Madstone used to belong to a Mr. Carney in Cassville, I believe it was. Over in there, I think it was Cassville. I remember he once made this statement to my father. He said, in these days of modern miracles, the man who declares a thing cannot be done must jump out of the way of the man who is doing it. Speaking of Vance Randolph, I have word that he's ill in the Veterans Hospital at Fayetteville, Arkansas. This grieves me beyond words. Vance is a veteran of the First World War. And I know nothing further except that he's improving. I have waited and tried to get some word of his recovery. I wish I knew more about it. Will someone write to me? Who knows? I doubt if Vance is able to write. Sam Leith at Eureka Springs is home from the hospital and getting all well again. Hurrah for you, Sammy. That's the best news in the world. Keep right on. I expect to be down to the festival in October and hope to see you fat and sassy again. You know, Sam, you used to meet me at the bus with the bus. Are you going to meet me at the bus with the bus? They always teased me, said Sam met me at the bus with a bus. And now I want to say hello to the tourist people, the Barrie Tours, who are in their car, great big car, going back. I wasn't with them last Saturday. I had to go home to the alumna. I was awful sorry not to be there, but I know that Maxim Hunter, I know you liked him, and he sang folk songs for you, and I know you had a wonderful time. Goodbye, and God bless you, and come back. Now, be sure and come back. And let me thank those who still send me trading stamps. You know, the darkest class of the First Baptist Church at Aurora sent a whole bundle of books filled. What a sweet and wonderful and Christian thing to do. Thanks to them, and God bless them. Mrs. O, I forget the woman who sent them. I'll tell you next time. She got them and ready for them. Mailed them. The stamps are coming in great. And you know, I opened a stamp-filled book, and there lay a $10 bill pinned in it. I almost fainted, believe me. I don't know which envelope it was in, and don't know the name of the good woman. I do wish she would write me a line. I want to write her a little line. I'll send her my picture. So many send the stamps, but with no name or no return. And they get to me all right, but I don't have the pleasure of knowing who they're from. But thanks for the $10 bill. That makes us over $35 in cash we've had. I also have had three letters last week with a dollar bill in. And now we turn in this cash. It's all turned in. I turned it all in to Mrs. The Yulee yesterday. The big package of stamps and the money. And I just send even the tiny amounts that you put in envelopes. They're appreciated just as much as the big ones. And thanks to Four, who sent me for Viola's book of poems this week. I wish you'd, as many as you could, would send for a book of Viola's poems. I wish she could get to sell more of them. It would help her a lot, and then you'd love the books. Now, in closing, I want to say to you all, my time's up, and goodbye, and I'll see you next Saturday, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.